Welcome, Amir. So lovely to reconnect with you. I was wondering if you could tell me about your new firm and what you're doing there. And obviously, you had some great results when you were at Munich Re Ventures. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Pimo, and good to reconnect with you as well. I recently joined Aviate Ventures, which is an early stage fund here in the Bay Area. We are on our second fund of $180 million and have been focusing on kind of like four, I would say, core categories or sectors, one of which has been healthcare or digital health. The other one has been infrastructure software, enterprise software, kind of the SaaS plays out there. The third one is kind of like deep tech, I would describe it. And the fourth one, which I was brought on board, and I'm very excited to be on board at Aviate Ventures, is to build out the fintech and insurtech practice. As you indicated, I've spent the past 6 years, help upbuild Munich Re Ventures, and was fortunate enough to work with the broader Munich Re Group and the colleagues over there, and have invested in all of the kind of like emerging insurtechs out there, specifically on the product and distribution side. And I'm very keen to, continue that legacy here now with Aviate Ventures.
And InsurTech is definitely very hot and has been for quite a few years. I've been running the FinTech events since 2016. So, they were really on the scene then. And I'm wondering how the crisis has affected the innovation in that domain.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So maybe a little bit more about my background. I actually started
Right.
investing in insurtech, almost 8 years ago. Before that, I actually grew up in Germany and spent most of my time in the tech scene in Germany. I was part of startups over there. But one of my first investment roles was with Route 66 Ventures on the East Coast, which is kind of like a premier fintech fund that has established itself on the East Coast. And I remember like my first investment was in Simple Assurance, which is basically a product warranty provider at the checkout, right? So the guys are focused mostly on Europe and in Asia, and try to come to the US as well. But InsurTech, I mean, it's been booming now for 5 or 6 years, as you indicated. But I think like, InsurTech has been around for many years, and people didn't even realize that from the get-go, right? I mean, think about like travel insurance, right? When you bought like, or when you're buying a plane ticket, how insurance is integrated into the process at the checkout, right? So InsurTech has been around, but it has never been really, innovative or digitized, right? I think
Okay.
the problem there is that insurance companies really didn't put, the customer in the front, right? When you think about insurance companies, categorize customers as policyholders rather than customers, right? So that basically tells you a lot about how insurance companies.
Dehumanizing, really.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the wave in insurtech started with where like entrepreneurs realized, hey, there's an opportunity not only to digitize and bring insurance online and distribute it online, but also have a customer centric approach to it, right? Be like, hey, you're the customer. Let's see what you need, and make it more tailored to your needs as well. But I think the biggest issue is insurtech is that insurance companies, they're great to sell you insurance when you don't even need it, right? But when you need insurance companies, they're not there for you. So the
How does that work?
later
Why
part,
does that
yeah,
happen?
the later part of insurance, when you really have a claim, I think that's where the frustration kicks in for most of the customers, and where like people really kind of quote unquote hate insurance. But these insurtechs have tried to disrupt and innovate the whole value chain from like, acquiring customers, underwriting and pricing customers, but also in the back end, like servicing customers when there is a need, right? So I think given that everything kind of went online, the insurtech, sector boomed even more throughout the pandemic, right? I think when we started with Munich Re Ventures almost 6 years ago, we were one of the earliest investors in insurtech. and we're fortunate enough to partner up and invest in a tremendous amount of like entrepreneurs and insurtechs. And it was interesting to see back in the days, a lot of investors were like, well, we don't know, insurance and insurtech is not really, you know, a sector we focus on. And it's quite interesting to see how that has emerged over the last, you know, 5 years. And I think now we're kind of like entering insurtech, I would say maybe version 2.0 or 3.0, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, more and more entrepreneurs are focusing on the insurtech or insurance category, similar to what we have seen, I think, in the fintech category, right? I mean, there was like a wave one and wave two, and, you know, the wave three we're entering right now, which kind of also culminates with insurance, is like the DeFi space, right? Where everything is, you know, transitioning into that sector, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So just moving on to the fintech subject, what do you see coming up the pipeline at the moment? Because everyone's telling me how hot the investment market is now. And obviously at the beginning of the crisis, everyone just were questioning what in the hell is going to happen and how is it going to go? And now it's really quite a hot market. So can you tell me a bit about what you're seeing coming up the pipeline and where you think things are heading as regards fintech? Because it is great that it's booming. I mean, the incumbents really needed to, you know, be moved along so that customers' needs would be fulfilled more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I differentiate, you know, obviously between fintech and insurtech. I think in the insurtech space, I start with that. I think what I'm really interested in, what I'm intrigued in, are kind of the niche markets in insurance, right? The insurtech wave started with, like, as mentioned, digitizing the traditional insurance products, right? From home insurance to auto insurance to renter's insurance, everything that, you know, everybody kind of needs, right? And I feel like commercial insurance was the second wave where people tapped into. Cyber insurance has been emerging and, you know, booming lately. But I really am interested in the niche markets, like collectibles insurance, right? Insurance for anything that you can collect, from jewelry to watches to art, digital art, NFTs and whatnot. And
They cover NFTs as well. That's interesting.
Yeah, there is actually like a startup that I think, going from like the insurtech to fintech, I'm transitioning it quickly, but there is a startup that just raised a little bit of seed funding and provides basically asset lending against your NFT, right? So if you have old NFTs, as you know, these things are fluctuating from the price perspective. You know, you might buy an NFT for like $100 if you're lucky, but then, you know, in a week it might be worth $1 million for whatever reason. Don't ask me why.
It's just the nature of the beast these days.
That's it. And you can basically provide lending against that, right? So right. I think collectibles insurance combined with lending against collectibles is a pretty interesting, you know, category that I'm following. Medical malpractice is another one which I have been very keen about and has been overlooked for years for a lot of different reasons, right? I mean, medical malpractice is a very cumbersome, I think, you know, process to underwrite, and, you know, very operationally driven. Loss ratios have been high, but I feel it's basically another kind of category of insurance that has been overlooked and, you know, has to be disrupted one way or the other in terms of like digitizing the underwriting process, bringing more innovation to that whole process, and also, you know, the distribution part as well. And I think when we transition now from there, I think, you know, all of these insurtechs that have been successful in the US market or the European market are kind of, you know, we see like replicating themselves in emerging markets. And with replicating, maybe not one-to-one, but we see, or what I see is like, you know, people are trying to rebuild parts of it, specifically in Latin America or Africa or Asia, right? And I've been looking into these markets to understand more how really financial services and insurance work. Because, for example, in the US and Europe, obviously, auto insurance is like, you know, mandatory, right? But that's not necessarily the case if you go to LATAM or Africa, right? So replicating that model that you see in the US or Europe in other markets is not necessarily going to be the right way. But I think there are bits and pieces that, you know, people will take and, you know, innovate in those markets as well. I think from the fintech perspective, as mentioned, you know, there is a lot of, you know, I would say hype and noise in DeFi and crypto, as I think everybody is kind of aware of. A lot of people are still denying it. There's a lot of people still say, yeah, that's just a hoax or whatever you want to call it. And it's not going to go anywhere. But I feel like if you really look into that, you know, the scene and what is happening is kind of replicating the early, you know, days of the internet, right?
Yes. I think you're spot on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So when the kind of internet, I don't know, started, let's say it this way, a few people really had access to it. A few people were excited about it. And a lot of people denied it and were like, no, nobody needs that. What is that? Yeah. Nobody wants to do. And gradually, like, you know, it evolved over time. And now think about it. If you don't have access to the internet, what are you going to do? Like, I don't know what to do, if I'm very honest with you.
yeah, exactly. It's become a necessity.
It's become a necessity, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Like the most trivial thing. I mean, I go from A to B. I know the way. I still put it in Google Maps, you know.
Yes.
So
they tell me, though, that that actually is closing down a part of our brains that we used to have to work out directions.
That's true.
So that's a worry.
So I think in the crypto world, it's the same, right? You see all of these, you know, new crypto tokens and coins popping up, you know, hyping up. I mean, a lot of those things are honestly really worthless, and I don't know where the value comes from. But I feel there is definitely a lot in between where when you look under the hood, you'd be like, hey, that makes total sense, right? So I think in the DeFi space and in the insurance space, I've been looking into that and try to understand how, you know, the blockchain and like all of these smart contract and whatever you want to call it out there really makes sense in terms of insurance, right? I don't think using blockchain to underwrite auto policies is really necessary to make it really better or whatever you want to call it, right? But I think if you look at, like, you know, other kinds of insurance in terms of like smart contract, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs these days focus on DeFi insurance, basically insuring your tokens or insuring your crypto holdings. I think it makes sense to have kind of like an insurance product out there. And most of it also resembles traditional insurance products that have been out there, like parametric insurance, right? Mm-hmm. So the blockchain basically helps to enable those kind of parametric products because everything is centralized and you can basically make a payment more quickly to the customer if there is a claim.
Right. And do you think that the crisis basically propelled a lot of fintech services? I know there's, you know, fintech, a lot of the investors have been telling me that there's a lot of fintech apps now that are going to be, that are being integrated into incumbent sort of banking, financial services that would never have happened before the crisis. Have you noticed that sort of effect as well?
No, absolutely. I think it will definitely go that way, right? I mean, I think the best examples in the fintech space are the neobanks, right?
Okay.
That are focusing on, you know, might be specific kind of customers, either millennials or, you know, maybe focusing on emerging markets and whatnot. And I think, you know, one of the biggest players out there, N26 out of Germany, has been pretty successful, and some others here in Latin America. And the reason I think they are so successful is that, I mean, they are, again, customer-centric, right? So when you need something from your bank, they're there for you. You can communicate with them. I mean, just as an example, right? I had something that I was trying to figure out with my bank. First of all, I couldn't find a number where to call. Then I called. It didn't pick up, and it was like waiting in like kind of waiting room. And then, you know, the service person picks up the phone, and when I try to explain the problem, she really couldn't help me out. She was like, I'm going to send you an email. And then she literally told me, you can fax us your response if you like. And I was like, wait a minute, is that really happening still? I don't even know what to do.
Who would have a fax?
So I think, you know, this is where the future is going.
Yeah.
obviously, like digitizing everything and being very customer centric on in the financial services industry. And I think I had to have the discussion with my partners too, is that you have to also differentiate who your customer is, right? If you speak to all of these millennials, the mid 20s to end 20s and early 30s, they don't want to deal with anybody anymore. So everything has to be kind of integrated into the process. Everything has to be right there. They don't want to think about, like, do I need insurance? What kind of insurance do I need? Do I need this kind of bank? Do I need this kind of, like, whatever service? They want to basically integrate into that process. And I think that's where we are going overall with, you know, fintech and insurtech, that, you know, everything is kind of integrated into the process, right? So, for example, if you want to buy a car, right, you can digitize the whole process through an app. You can pick up your car. You can pick up your car. You can pay with your debit card, and insurance is already integrated into that price, right? And the perfect scenario is it delivered to your home, and if you don't like it, someone goes to pick it up again.
Things have become a lot easier in that respect, that's for sure. Just moving on, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the German tech scene. I have spent a lot of years in Dublin in Ireland. I had a business there. So I'm always interested in what's happening in Europe. Can you give us a little peek in to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I spent quite some time when I was at Munich in Europe, right? And obviously with the relation to our mothership over there.
Yeah.
I think, you know, absolutely the best, you know, what I can say from Germany's perspective, I mean, there are super smart, you know, entrepreneurs and engineers out there, right? I think the access to capital has, you know, risen as well. So there's a lot of capital available, which was not the case when I was back in Germany, right? And people are becoming more and more tech savvy. But I think the problem, I mean, I can just speak probably to Germany, maybe Europe in general is not the case, but like, I think regulation and the mindset of people is just different. And I think that makes it different for startups to really, you know, survive. You know, when you think about how many unicorns we mint in the US, right? And how many startups raise so much money and are successful, it's just a fraction for that, maybe in Germany or Europe. And I think the reason is that people are not, I mean, don't quote me on that. I get a lot of pushback for that, but people are not as open and open-minded to new innovation and technology. And that's, I think, where entrepreneurs struggle to really, you know, build systems up there, right? So the mindset is just different. The people are, I would say, probably more pessimistic than optimistic to give a shot to people to innovate over there. But the scene is, you know, growing. I think Berlin is like really booming there, and a lot of, you know, people are building there and very excited. And I think we see like the second wave over there where, you know, it resembles a small kind of community that resembles Silicon Valley. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, people in Europe still will come over to Silicon Valley to, you know, raise capital, to, you know, connect with people and so on and so forth.
I guess the summary really in Europe, for each country that exists there, it's just much older cultures, and obviously the US is much newer and much more open to capitalism and business, which is sort of, I like that about it, and it's great. Anyway, Amir, look, lovely to talk to you today and catch up with you, and we'll hopefully have you back on the show somewhere down the line.
Sounds good, Pima. Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to, you know, keeping in touch with you.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Pima. Bye.